open it up to the question and answer period. Again, you'll want to keep your phone muted unless you're asking a question. And if you could, please identify yourself and your news outlet and who your question is directed to. First, I'm going to ask the reporters that are here in the room if they have a question. Mr. Masaru from Japan Agricultural News will open the question period.
Thank you. I have two questions to Mr. Sen. And as you stated, that Australia is going to ship their product to the Japanese market at the lower rate because of the FTA. And what kind of impacts do you see, and what kind of measures are you going to take to deal with it? The second question is on TPP. Last week, USDA published two TPP-related reports, and in that report, beef is the single largest gainer in terms of money, and I would like to have your comment on this.
Yeah, I think first of all, with the EPA that was initialed between Japan and Australia, obviously, this somewhat concerns us. We know that the Aussies, or the Australians, for example, had negotiated for almost 5 years to have their own EPA with Japan. We remember very well that Prime Minister Abe, when he was the Prime Minister the first time, initiated the EPA with Australia. So he's had a very active interest in trying to expand trade with his oceanic partners and friends. We are, I think the commerce is what it is. I mean, this is the situation. I think that in the United States, the cattlemen and the industry work very closely. They have what they call a Five Nations Beef Conference. They work very closely together on a lot of these access issues and issues associated with trade. I was hoping that there would be some way that there would be some restraint that Australia would hold together, because I think as all countries hold together for the ideal position, it strengthens our hand. And the fact that some countries are actually doing their own deal, even though they've initiated talks with Japan prior to this, I think it weakens our position. So now we have to deal with Australia, which is in Japan. It's always been our major challenge on beef. When we first went to Japan in the early 80s, Australia had a 90% market share, and we worked to actually exceed their market share before we had, of course, the issues in 2003. But we've been gaining market share rather dramatically. I think there's also economic factors that impact Australia. They're in a very, very serious drought, as we well know. Their cattle numbers are down, rumored to be close. Their cow numbers are down, rumored to be close to about down a million head, or the lowest cow herd basically in the last 20 years. So they have supply problems that are going to be very, very difficult. But I think that the United States has its own niche within the Japanese market. We will work very assiduously to try to fulfill that niche and expand our market share as we have been. But obviously, the longer this goes on, the more competitive Australia will be, especially as the U.S. dollar is becoming stronger. This compounds the challenge. So we have a lot of work to do in Japan as a result of the Australian EPA that was initialed between Japan and Australia last year. I think as far as the two reports that were issued last week by the USDA, I need more time to actually take a look at this. We have to have our analysts here at the USMEF look at this. So I'd rather not comment on that at this point in time until we've had a chance to really go through the analysis. Thank you.
Okay. Now I'm going to open it up for questions on the phone. We'll kind of go first come, first serve here. So if please ring in and identify yourself. If your question isn't directed at anyone in particular, we will assign it. But if you want to direct it at someone on the panel, please indicate that. So open to the first question. Oh, the question is, what are the particular niches in the Japanese market that we're looking to fill?
I think number one is the niches that we have in the market. Number one would be, I think we've been very strong in the retail area. As far as coming back in the Japanese market, we've been very strong in the yakiniku area. As you know, after the tsunami hit, this was also a very hard hit area. Consumption dropped, and we've worked very hard since the tsunami, since the Shinsai, as they call it in Japanese, the earthquake, to basically recover that portion of the market. One of the new areas in the markets that we're starting to see a lot of success in would be even in the convenience store market that has actually been a new challenge in the retailing area. This is a very strong area, over $90 billion sector, and we've been making inroads in that area. So there's a lot of different niches, plus also we've been doing a lot of work regionally in Japan, and this regional work has started to pay off for us as we're getting back into the market as a result of BSE and also after the slowdown from the earthquake. Joel, I'll turn it over to you for the second answer.
Yeah, Steve, so if I heard you correctly, you were asking about what's the buying sentiment in terms of the higher prices for beef.
Correct.
As I mentioned in my preface, it's amazing to see what people are paying for some of these cuts and buying the same volume. So you're seeing volumes going up to countries like Korea, but the value's going up even more. For example, our beef exports to Korea, which consist of items such as short ribs and chuck rolls, the value's up 50%. Now, buyers in countries like Korea, when the market's going up, there can be the psychological sentiment that the market's going to go up further, meaning whatever you've bought now is going to be even more valuable a couple of months down the road. Now, of course, at some point that will turn. Whatever goes up comes down. But so far, we've seen buyers still piling in with aggressive volume orders at these higher prices. At some point, I think we will see an inflection point. Every cut has its own market dynamics. We see in Hong Kong some beginnings of resistance on prices to items like short ribs, but that's anecdotal. There still may be, that could be short term. They still could buy more at higher prices later, but the prices are at record levels and those volumes remain high. Other items remain in short supplies simply because the beef demand is outstripping our ability to supply these cuts. Items like short plate, which fit into so many different menus ranging from beef bowl in Japan to it can be cooked into steaks, it can be served as stir fry or dim sum, and that demand just continues to grow. It's still a reasonably priced item, but the demand is basically outstripping the supply, and the price continues to go up. I'm not sure that answers your question, but let me know if it hasn't.
Well, just a quick follow-up. Are there any particular cuts that have the most, what are the most price-sensitive cuts?
Well, items like, price-sensitive cuts, if you look over the last year, it doesn't look like anything's been price-sensitive in terms of the major volume cuts. But I think at some point people will, as I think John mentioned earlier, at some point people will take a breather and search for substitutes. I would say that on the exporter side, there are new items being shown by exporters in these markets. Importers, while paying the high prices for these large volume cuts like short plate and short ribs, they're also looking for alternatives. There are some alternative cuts coming into the marketplace, and those are really in the evaluation stage right now. So there have been some sales, but it's going to take time before they reach these huge volumes of those other items I was mentioning.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Joel. Thank you, Janie. Janie's asking, you're asking about, say, new and emerging markets where we haven't had an established business presence. Would that be accurate? Okay. Who wants to jump on that first?
Well, maybe I'll take a shot at it, and then I'll have the other three gentlemen can speak about it. But I think one of the major new initiatives that we've initiated at MEF is really taking a look at Africa. This mirrors, I think, the effort and the interest by the current administration in a outreach to Africa. I think the Europeans have been doing this for years, and it's been a center plate of their approach. But we've had I think probably six or seven different trips to Africa over the course of the last 18 months. John Brooke oversees that whole area, that whole region. We've been to various markets that he could talk about in more depth, but we're definitely looking at those markets. We're also looking, as Chad Brussel will indicate, Central and South America. We've been in these markets for a long time, but as Joel indicated, we're looking at new items and new products to go into these markets. And these markets all change. There's a lot of dynamic in these markets, and so we're looking at areas that would be along those lines. I think also John Brooke could talk about, when he talked about Greater Asia, from the standpoint of the Russian realm, if you will. There's all these stands. He indicated that our efforts with our staff in Moscow and also St. Petersburg are reaching out to many of those hinterlands, and there's a lot of work and there's a lot of interest where we're seeing development in those areas. Then the other thing is, and I think that a lot of people always ask this question about new markets, and I think it's important to take a look at new markets, but frankly, MEF today is in over 100 markets around the world. If you take a look at the fact there's about 200 countries in the world, really to basically reach the projections that maybe the beef and the pork industry have recently outlined, we have to have a very active displacement approach in these markets. So if you work for a private company, one of the things you try to do is you try to displace your competition in most cases. And that's the same thing when it comes to international trade. Those other 100 countries that we're not in, they might not have the cold chain that is necessary. They might not have the credit worthiness that is necessary. There's a lot of factors that go into selling product internationally. And we found with the precious little dollars that we have at MEF that there's a certain point where you go into new markets and there's a certain point where you have an activity where you start to look at displacing your competition. And that means if you're displacing your competition, they have the credit worthiness. It means they have the cold chain. It means they're familiar with meat. They're familiar with our products. And I think that's where we're starting to see the most success is not so much in just development, but also in displacement. And this is going to be a major discussion at our meeting here over the course of the next 3 days. So with that, I'll turn it over to the other gentlemen who are much more closer to this than I am.
Okay, this is John. So just very, very briefly, so as Phil said, in Africa, what we're doing, first of all, is really following that commodity business which is developed already in the chicken leg quarter market and looking at those countries where those importers exist, where there is some infrastructure developing and where also there is a growing population and a growing middle class, and we're beginning to see some retail, traditional retail, or traditional in the way that you would be used to seeing it, rather than an open wet market. And very briefly, so the biggest of those countries is Angola, large oil exporter. Nigeria is actually closed to imports, but a lot of product travels through its neighbor, Benin. Ghana, Gabon, and the Ivory Coast. Very briefly on Greater Russia. So we've already been very active in Ukraine, and we'll continue that. We're going to do more activities in Moldova and Georgia. At the same time, we're looking to, again, see how we can enhance the trade. There's already some trade going on in Uzbekistan, even Kyrgyzstan. Sometimes to get product there, particularly the Russian embargo, because a lot of product used to transit through Russia, there's some fairly exotic routes going through, so this product can either go through Poti in Georgia or even through the Middle East trading companies in Dubai. And I'd also add that in places where you think there is, you know, total chaos, people still have to eat. And in that Middle Eastern sector, are of course markets like Iraq, which are not on paper receiving product directly, but product is getting through to those countries through local traders.
Okay, Joel, did you have something you'd like to add?
Well, just in Asia, a couple of ones we're looking at and have visited multiple times over the last 2 years, Sri Lanka for beef and pork, Myanmar, and Cambodia. Just to repeat what Phil said, I mean, these are very initial trips looking to clarify access regulations and identify initial importers and end users.
In the case of Latin America, just very briefly, as I mentioned, we are doing quite a bit of work in Central America. region, and we do have the free trade agreements there, so we believe there's more benefits to be harvested in those markets as our access improves and as we educate and familiarize customers there more about our products and our systems, et cetera. The other thing I should mention, in the case of Mexico, we've worked there for many years. It's a very large market. And kind of paralleling what Phil said, I mean, there are sectors even within Mexico that have great potential and promise that have been underserved. I mean, we can't work with everybody, but like medium-sized processors, we have some new initiatives of them, regional supermarkets. So we feel that by working in some of those other sectors that we can generate a lot of return for the same dollar.
Okay, the question is some of the new product offerings in established markets.
There, yeah, this is Joel Hygert. So, well, there's many, but without giving away any proprietary information, because there's not even unified nomenclature on how to call some of these items. But one would be the tail of the loin. That would be one. There's some new specifications for intercostal meat, which can be sold as rib meat. These are the type of items. I think these are items that probably went into the trim bin before, but because of their just the presence of lean tissue, are generating some interest. Just because of the high value of lean beef globally, these items which would go into trim are now being looked at in terms of being able to be merchandised as table meat.
Okay, any other questions from the phone? The question is, are we seeing a slowdown in shipments to Asia due to the congestion at some of the Southern California ports?
I have not heard of any critical breaks in the supply chain. Most of the meat, at least coming to the South Asia region, is frozen. Not sure about Japan, but I don't think there's any major disruptions which would cause problems in terms of expired shelf lives on chilled meat either.
Thank you, Joel. We have watched that situation pretty carefully. We have not heard from a lot of members. We hear occasionally about congestion problems at some of the ports, and of course we're watching the situation very carefully with regard to the master contract. Those negotiations have been going on quite a lot longer than people expected, so that's a situation that we're keeping a close eye on. But I would echo what Joel said as far as our member communications, the daily messages we get in the Export Services Department. We have not heard about any major delays in outbound shipments. Any other questions from the phone? Question is whether we have any information about beef or pork being on the retaliatory list for Mexico with regard to WTO sanctions from the country of origin labeling dispute.
When I met with officials in the Mexican government, they've consistently told me they have not yet drawn up any type of retaliatory list, so I really don't know what might be on a list, assuming that they're given the right to retaliate. As you know, undoubtedly, the WTO has ruled twice against the U.S. COOL law. I think it'll be sometime next year, maybe late spring or summer. It's my understanding that perhaps all the appeals and other procedural steps would be fulfilled. That might lead to the possibility of Mexico and Canada be given the right to retaliate, but I don't want to speculate. I do know in a case of the NAFTA trucking dispute that took place a couple of years ago that was finally resolved through a bilateral negotiation, there were some pork products on that list. There were no beef products. That doesn't mean to say that the Mexican would take the same approach this time, so basically I don't know.
Okay.
We have just a few minutes left. Other questions from the phone? Okay, Phil, I received one question by email. A gentleman would like to know if USMEF has a position on the proposal for a second beef checkoff, so to speak.
Well, I think number one is I think that we support increases in the checkoff because of that. Obviously, in 1985, and when the Farm Bill was passed in 1985, the dollar today is not what it was back then. Of course, when you go to raise the rates or you go to do anything, it does bring a lot of interest. And obviously, there was a group of, I think, 8 different organizations that were assembled in over the course of the last 18 months to try to talk about how they would rationalize this. And they were not able to come to agreement. And so I think the secretary has used this as a means to try to, I think, force some type of compromise within the industry. And I think this is an incentive to do that. So from our standpoint, we want to guard and we want to preserve all the checkoffs. I think there's 18 checkoffs that are out there. We see this as very fundamental to market development and market displacement. We see it very, very fundamental to the viability of our pork and beef industries and all the other people who have checkoffs. So hopefully this can be resolved. I really urge these parties to get together and come to some kind of a compromise that will allow us to go forward and continue to promote the product. From the standpoint of the U.S. Meat Export Federation, that's all we really want to do is do everything that we can do to advantage our industries, beef, pork, and lamb, in the international marketplace. So any vehicle, anything that can be generated that will help us do that, any additional funding that will help us do that, we appreciate that. But I do know this, what determines our capability to compete internationally depends on our capability to cooperate. The more we can cooperate, the more we're going to be successful internationally. Thank you.
Okay, in just a couple of minutes left, I'd take one final question if there are any from the phone. The question is, as Russia draws meat imports from Brazil and from Paraguay and from some new suppliers that they've approved, how does that change the overall pattern of global meat trade?
So this is John. So Joel, when Joel answered the question about what items have been affected by the high prices, and he's commenting that everything seems to be moving, I think we're in a situation in beef in the world today where it's quite clear that despite the price levels of beef, demand is at the moment outstripping supply, and that obviously is resulting in the price levels. And so the effect of the Russian ban as far as beef has been concerned is simply to redistribute, as you have said, who's doing which business. So if South America is shipping more beef to Russia, the European Union and the United States are not, and that beef is finding its way basically to Asia. Situation in pork is maybe slightly different, as the supply and demand global situation is not as tight. Russia has clearly stated its desire to become self-sufficient, and overall Russian imports of pork have dropped substantially this year, with a corresponding very, very sharp price rise in the domestic market, which was what was desired by Russian government in order to encourage its domestic production. Those prices have come tumbling down very, very rapidly in the last couple of months, so we're back to where we were in April. And we'll have to see how that plays out now.
Thank you.
Okay, with that, I think we're going to close the call. If you have any follow-up questions, you all should have my contact information. Go ahead and contact me by phone or email, and I will do my best to get you the information. Thank you for joining us.